All right, and we are recording. Perfect. So people can see us. All right, good. This is wonderful. So good morning, Frank, Jacob, and everybody else out there. I do see we have a little bit of a live stream going today, so that's nice seeing some people that hopped on. And I'll be watching. I will respond to questions. I'll throw them in here if I can, if I see them. And with that, Frank Jacob, good morning. Good afternoon for you, actually. It's morning here in the Arizona desert. Thanks for coming on. I just was so happy that you'd hop on and we could chat about things because definitely there is a tale of two timelines. We know which one that we want to be on, and right now the world's gone completely crazy as if it wasn't already. But anyway, I think we're in a moment that is beyond politics. And I wanted to get your take on the current world crazy situation.
Okay.
I don't mean to be vague. I can drill down on that question a little bit. But good morning. And how's the world looking out there?
Well, I mean, actually, today is the day of election day, and in the part of the world where I am, so that's an interesting little synchronicity. And
Wow.
many people here believe that, that there's this, well, there's this party which has been endorsed by Elon Musk, which
Yes.
is called the AfD, and so it's like Alternative for Deutschland, and a lot of people, and which is not notoriously well known to be kind of a right, wing party. Of course, the left media tends to portray them as extreme right wing party, radical extreme right wing parties. They can't get them far enough to the right because they, because the current leader of that party, Alice Weidel's great grandfather, was a judge and part of the SS. So, during the Third Reich. So, they love to just, allude to those kind of synchronicities to try and make their point. But it's ridiculous. It's getting to the point where it's absurd. And so you have what you have going on over here, apparently, and from the maps they show us, the demographics. I'm not sure how far we can trust them, but let's just say there's some legitimacy to them. It shows about, a split, in the country. So the part on the upper eastern part of Germany is pro AfD, and the part on the left, western southern part is the black part of the map, which is considered the Christian Democrats, the standard, the conservatives or whatnot, right? And they like to divide up into these paradigms. I don't know how accurate the split is. I mean, but anyway, it's considered to be the first time that this party has ever had a chance to kind of upset the standard order in Germany to the degree that they would have to share power, and that would be, God forbid, right? Or God forbid, I should say. They would have to share party a power with this radical party out there, right? So you have this is going on in the background right now, but there's another element to it that nobody's really talking about. And that is that, really it doesn't matter. It's like there are these other forces at play here that are not being discussed. They're completely ignored. It's the elephant in the room nobody talks about. And so you've got you've got people broken down into these, into this polarity, which they like to do just to keep us. If they can keep us, if they can keep the population polarized, it's another form of what I call just the great distraction. So it's about keeping the population distracted from what? Well, distracted from the things that matter, which is to realize that, we're all these conscious energies that, that we're made of frequency, and we have the ability to change matter and to affect the entire planet, and that there's this element of artificial intelligence which has come into the play, which is becoming a big player in our world. And it's not just that we're going to have, better, mobile telephone reception, or faster, whatever, movie streaming or whatever, or that we can have, you know, somebody answer questions for us on Wikipedia really quickly as an AI, but that it actually is a disruption that is going to turn society completely on its head. And that if we don't begin to address those important questions about what it means to have this influence in our society, it won't matter what party you belong to. It's like, who cares, right? You're part of the AFD, great, right? But you know, if you suffer from cognitive diminishment, which is kind of what they're pushing, you won't have a brain to decide, or you won't know anyone. In fact, you'd be quite happy to just let AI make the decisions for you, right? So the parties and this idea of this kind of a system in the world are rapidly going extinct and becoming irrelevant. And that this is, of course, something which that the elite wants to happen. So that if they can give us the idea, the illusion of a choice in society, and in America, you guys just had it. Now you have it. You're in the middle of the first month or two of the Trump Savior administration, right?
Yes.
So you've got all this stuff going on where everyone's going, yes, Doge, it's going to fix the problems, right? And it's funny because, and yes, you know, it's amazing to sit here as an innocent bystander and watch all of that go down over there in amazement. But for me, the questions of what Doge is doing have been obvious for a long, long time. You know, I remember when I came over to Germany in the very beginning, and I hooked up with an internet incubator, and they hired me to help them, you know, develop software and business plans. And one of the first things I was saying is, well, you know, we should use the internet as a way to make government transparent, make them put it all online. Like, let's see, let's look under the hood. Let's see, well, how many dollars are being, or Daymarks back then still, are being used to, you know, for education, how much is being used for in a wasteful way, right? These are obvious things that have been, for anybody who's a thinker, well, I guess I'm considered a thought leader now that I'm on Quartet, but everyone who's a thought thinker, a leader, whatever, these are things that are kind of obvious, right? It's like, yeah, no kidding, right? I mean, the IRS is doing, running checks into the trillions, into accounts that nobody can trace. Well, let's see who's doing that, right? No kidding. It's a no-brainer, right? Meanwhile, they've been, you know, kind of sucking the energy from the population, just like the tax people over here. And this is something I have to deal with myself. You know, I have a huge tax bill hanging over my, looming over my existence, right? So, you know, we're constantly having to manifest just to get rid of that nuisance, right? And what a waste of your manifestation energy. Mm. So, you know, these are some of the things, I guess, that's been kind of going through my brain and in the last few days. It's been amazing to kind of watch the world develop right now and to wherever it's going. And we know, you know, you talked about the two timelines, you know, we know what those options are. A lot of people like to say, well, everyone's got their timeline. Yeah, we know that. But we're talking about the consensus timeline here. We're talking about the two primary principal directions that society will go into in the next, you could say, 5 to 20 maximum years.
Yes.
And we're going to be in one of those timelines in a very, very large way. Right now, we're crisscrossing, kind of like DNA. You know, we're like, we're dancing between these two worlds. We're already in both timelines, you know, and what people don't understand about the timelines is, you know, we talked about that. I talked about that in the Tale of Two Timelines, and the idea of how you, where you put your focus depends on where, you know, what timeline you're investing in, what we're, you know, what are you resonating with? Because you are frequency, right? And your brain is frequency. And you put that frequency out there, you're going to connect it to things that are of the equal frequency, and it's going to, you know, exchange information and come back. So if you're not vigilant and you're not aware that you have a choice between timelines, and you have a choice between an artificial transhumanist timeline and a organic natural biological timeline, then you're going to be caught into the, you know, into the consensus of where the ignorant masses are focusing their brainwaves and their frequencies. Understand?
100%. Yeah. And that's, it's quite a opportune moment that it's election day there. And we just had election day here, and EFTA is something that I know over here in the States that, you know, many, especially like the MAGA crew, you know, or the, well, MIGA crew, as a lot of people are calling it now. We can talk about that more. Are looking at, and you know, when you look at the you know, stance of EFTA, how do you guys say it? EFTA, or do you say AFD?
AFD.
AFD, you guys call it that. Okay. And so really there, anybody who's calling that extremely, you know, like to the extreme right, and it's silly because it's not. I mean, it's comparatively speaking to like what they consider, you know, far right in this country, it's I see it as very left. I mean, it's just not that hardcore. And to make a big deal out of it, I find this very shocking. And it goes to show how the adversary, as I call it these days, does not like to be questioned even in the slightest bit. They don't want any hindrance to their plans. And AFD being mildly to the right is just, they can't have it, you know?
No. And then but the thing is they can and they will, but you know, it doesn't matter because, you know, the bigger questions are not being addressed.
Yes.
So it doesn't really matter what party gets into power. And it's funny if there's all these there's these contradictions, like they represent the traditional man, woman, child, family, and yet the leader of the party is lesbian and in a gay marriage with an Indian woman of color in Switzerland. I mean, like, everything is wrong in that constellation, right? According to the rule set of that particular ideology, right? So this is just perfect example of the kind of hypocrisy and craziness that's part of the whole mainstream going on right now.
Oh, yeah. And we're seeing that for sure everywhere. And one thing I was going to mention is this, is because you mentioned the AI, which, of course, is always a topic. But a good friend of our vice president, Elon Musk, the CEO of Oracle, Larry Ellison, that we all know and love, you know, he had recently, and I checked this, and this is a summary of what he said, but it is what he said, I do believe, recently, and I forget where, but when he was speaking, I think it was like a X Spaces or something like that. He said countries need to unify all of their data so it can be accessed and consumed by AI models. Ellison says this includes health data, genomic data, which he also states can be used to develop genetically personalized vaccines for consumers. And so when you mentioned that it doesn't matter what party is in power, I mean, this is really the party that is rising to power. And it's beyond the illusion of Doge or MAGA or MIGA, however you want to put it, or AFD.
Right. No, and I think I'm aware of that quote actually, and it's funny because he's like, I think there's a cliffhanger on that quote saying, you know, that would be the last thing that we would need.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. And like you're like, well, for what? Like, why isn't anyone answering that question, right? It's like that's what's been holding us back. I think that's the last thing holding us back. So like these are like cloaked heavily loaded statements, mm-hmm. right, holding us back, right? Well, we kind of know, those of us I'm kind of digging into it, all this transhumanist stuff, kind of know what holding back means, holding us back from what means. I think many people that are Elon Musk's fans and Trump fans and you know, look, you've got Sam Altman, you've got Ellison, Elon Musk, you know, you've got Peter Thiel, J.D. Vance. Right? These are all part of a club, you know, cult, I could say, you know, because it's funny. It's like it's really a cult. Right. And this is an interesting discussion I got into with John Lash the other day, just about a private discussion about, you know, cults, right? Like what are cults, right? And if you get accused of leading people toward a cult of like earth consciousness or something, right? then, you know, the question is, well, what's the alternative cult? Like, what are you afraid of going? What would you go back to then, right? If you weren't in the cult, like what cult would you go back to? Because in a way the mainstream is kind of a cult and the Elon Musk crew is a cult. And their cult is called technocracy. And that's the cult of using technology to essentially dominate the tasks of government so that, you know, because people are too dumb and too lazy and too incompetent and they need to get paid and they got vacations and they have children and stuff and they need time off. So they, you know, why not replace that with a technocracy, meaning machines which are more efficient, they don't complain. And you know, they work nonstop, and they're based on logic only, you know, they don't let their hearts or their feelings get in the way of making important decisions. Right. So that's the cult of technocracy, and that's where they want I mean, this is carefully planned. I mean, look, this has been going on for, Craig, I think at least 250 years, if not longer. But I mean, it's been ramping up. You know, the idea of the abolishment of royals and the monarchies, right? They were painted as being evil, right? All the revolutions that came along in the course of the last 250 years, where the people get power, right? And then eventually communism, Bolshevism, and all these ideas of that, you know, everyone's equal. You know, everyone, you know, it's bad. The elite are bad. And the latest thing in America is the white men, the white people are bad because they've been dominating and, you know, and keeping everyone enslaved. I mean, this is an ideology which they're putting into the world because they want to bring about this equality. And the best way to create equality is, of course, if you have machines making all the decisions and then everyone else is equal. They got nothing, you know, they're not making any decisions anymore. They're just workers, right? And this is, we're at a very, very dangerous point in society right now. It's so dangerous. I just don't understand. I don't know how many people really get it to the extent that really how urgent it is that we deal with it and we talk about it. You know, John Peterson at the Arlington Institute is talking about the 2-year window, right? 2 years and it's up. Right. You know, and he did a talk just his transition talk just last month, I think, on the 2-year transition time, you know, to get over to this new world. We have 2 years left. And, you know, I don't know if it's 2 years. I think, you know, I don't like to use numbers. I find that's kind of like a little bit sensationalist and scary to get people. And, you know, but at the same time, it is extremely urgent because decisions are being made right now. A new foundation is being set in America right now in the government. A new foundation is being laid whereby, you know, they are really looking. They're like, what did Trump say when he brought Larry Ellison into the White House? They were talking about server farms, you know, that had to be built. Huge, humongous server farms. What for? Well, to house the AI. Yeah. Right. And AI gobbles a lot of energy. Right. So nowadays, server farms of that magnitude need their own nuclear power plant beside them to function. They gobble so much energy. Right.
Yeah.
And yet here at the same time, they're trying to tell us that we're carbon sinners, you know, and we should be scaling back and using, like, you know, solar panels outside of our window. And pretty soon, you know, we shouldn't be using any oil products or carbon, you know, combustible engines and any of this stuff. And yet at the same time, the power consumption for the technocratic new foundation that's being laid is going to be the biggest power sucker of all time, unequaled by anything. And no one's talking about these numbers either. There's another thing, like, we're talking about now. It's like nobody's talking about the kind of kilowatt hours drawn by an AI. And it's going up exponentially. So many people are having access to, you know, to AI and using it, ChatGPT and whatnot. Every one of us that uses that is drawing on that energy. It has to come from somewhere, right? It doesn't just magically show up on your computer. That little single text answer or that graphic you had created, that used up a certain amount of kilowatt hours while you were putting it out there. Were you thinking about that when you put the type command in there? I'm sure you weren't, right? You just want the answer and you want it now. Less than a minute, right? So this is the kind of stuff that we're all distracted with, but we're not talking about, and Larry Ellison and these guys, they're not telling you all this stuff. They're just making it look like, wow, you know, Doge has gone in and laid off thousands and saved $2 trillion by now, you know, because the government's been wasteful. And yes, they have been wasteful and we've been sleeping. You know, the founding fathers said, you have a republic democracy if you can keep it, they said. And it lasted, I think, on record, I think 12 years or something like that when I was studying the Constitution. And then after that, it kind of went into statutory law and became all faux color of law stuff with statutes, and democracy took over, republic got pushed into the background. And now you basically have color of law and, you know, constitution. I mean, they don't even have the Constitution, I read, in the White House at the present moment.
Really?
There's no copy of the Constitution in the White House. Huh? Excuse me? Right? Like, why not? Right? So that shows you where the priorities aren't.
Yeah.
And
we call it like rules-based order along with that. Like, there's no, you know, rule of law internationally, which I think that there probably would be, but especially with America being the big player that we are, we like to call it a rules-based order. And the rules basically are whatever we want right now. And so that's the thing. It's really hard to call to call what we do law. And when it comes to the AI, yeah, Doge is, well, you know, it goes to show, I think, how long these plans are in place. And I think this recent, well, we'll see how your election goes, but the election here has been kind of far out, the fallout that we've had from that. I don't think it's even what everybody expected. Maybe some did exactly, but I think it's gone beyond politics and beyond what we thought was going to happen so quickly. Maybe some already knew. I don't know. I was taken by surprise. But the thing with Doge, of course, as we know, was a meme coin before there even really were meme coins. It was one of the first, you know, not the first, but a true shit coin, as they call it. And it was created just for fun. And the guy eventually, he kind of dumped the project, but Doge lived on. And if one, you know, one can study the history of Doge as a crypto, but it was pretty much a joke. But now I start looking at it and going, wait a second. Now you've got Elon Musk, who did pump it a few times by simply mentioning it years ago. And, you know, when we think about insider trading and such, I mean, there were people who loaded up on Doge the day before that. I mean, of course, this is how they make their money. This is how you help your friends out. So it was an incredible money grab for elite who were in on it, who knew what he was going to tweet before he tweeted it. Yeah. And now there's a government department called Doge, and somewhere along the lines, I remember, I think Elon Musk tweeted like, Doge is the answer, it's the way, or something like that. And this was a while ago. Yeah. And so you start, I realized, wait a second, like, was Doge even organic? Because you start, I think sometimes as humans, we don't live very long. We live by, like, 1 year is kind of a long time to us. And so we don't tend to really grasp sometimes 250-year plans, 70-year plans, 10, right, 12-year plans. And so I start thinking, Doge, that was a part of the plan, I think. Now, that was no organic just happening. It's sort of like Kennedy writing the book about Fauci, you know?
Right, well, exactly.
And it's like, nah, so he knew where he was going to be sitting when he wrote that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it makes you wonder about the looking glass technology, right?
Yes. Yes.
And you know, what form that may have taken or may have evolved into, and who's using it right now. And, you know, it's really, but I tell you, nothing is organic. Yeah. And, you know, nothing out there right now, you can be sure of, nothing is organic. This is stuff that they've been planning a long, long time. And they've been playing the left-right paradigm, problem-solution paradigm for so long. That people are, and normal people don't function this way. It's like normal, healthy people. When I was talking about the Sophianic creation myth, you know, yes, when John Lash and I incorporated him into the time capsule webinar, that there's a part of that story that talks about how the human genome was endowed with all these special endowments, that we were given these talents and these skills, this amazing skill of genius and of feeling and of what we're doing right now, verbal communication, right? And all these things, these were things that we were given as endowments by our aeonic creators. But one of the things that we weren't given was the idea, that was the ability to deal with deception and lies and manipulation. This was unforeseen, right? So when the archons came into reality, into matter, and hit the material realm during Sophia's fall from the Pleroma, that set about this anomaly, which led to the idea of a species which capitalized on that weakness. And that's been going on since before humans ever even, since before there was even the planet Earth, according to the Gnostic teachings, right? It's very, very interesting looking at those teachings now, many, many thousands of years later, and finding the direct correlations to what we have manifesting in the world around us right now. So thinking, you know, taking us back to the idea of organic versus non-organic, right? Yeah. You know, these movements are non-organic because they still play toward the idea of a slave race meme, right? Where there's a master race and a slave race, and the slave race being the useless eaters, as Yuval Harari likes to refer to them as, in some of his later materials, is the idea that you have to, you know, there's someone that has to kind of look over and shepherd over the ignorant masses, right? And so they can't let things happen by accident. They have to steer them, and they've been trying to steer them. But what they're not taking into consideration is the idea that Sophia, being the actual embodiment of the planet, being a being, a humongous, aeonic, divine, you know, entity, which actually, you know, colliding with matter, collected the substances to turn herself into the planet and the consciousness, dreaming humanity, would also come awake and would also reconnect with her luminous child. And we are the luminous child, according to these Gnostic teachings. We are the luminous children. We have this divine intelligence in every single one of us. And the way we connect it to our divine mother Earth, Sophia, is through frequency. It's interesting that it seems hopeless and it seems like nothing's organic, but what is organic are these anomalous changes which can happen, which will bring about kind of a radical phase transition very, very quickly. And it has to do with transparency and kind of like seeing through the game, which is why I think I spend so much time talking about all the dark shit, not because I love it or I want to, you know, amplify it or manifest it. As some people say, well, if you talk about the dark stuff, you're going to make it happen. No, it's about identifying it, IDing it, and seeing that's the Wizard of Oz there, people. Let's pull the curtain down. Who's standing there, right? A little wimpy old man who's blaring into a horn. And the Archons themselves are those, you know, they have been described as kind of an aborted fetus, right? They have this humongous head. They have these beady-like eyes and a spindly little body because they were never fully developed. They were like, they got elements of the Anthropos, of the human genetic design, passed along to them just through the sheer collision between a divine aeonic substance, a torrent, an energetic plasmic torrent, with the name of Sophia that collided with matter, which the matter became automatically imbued with that energetic signature. And part of that is going to have those elements of the creation that was intended in it. And that's what the Archons are. They're an aborted idea, an uncompleted idea of what humanity is, but they have this mimetic ability to copy. And it's really, you know, I've been thinking a lot about that lately. If you don't mind me expanding.
Oh, go for it. Go for it. Yeah, go for it.
You know, I mean, one of the things that struck me the other day was, first of all, you know, Lash keeps repeating that they, you know, and Jacques Vallée talks about, you know, the idea of the abduction fantasy, like this, we've been programmed, you know, with the abduction scenario. So people that have encounters with archontic elements, they go into that dreamlike state and they see those characters because those characters have been implanted into the human psyche for over, well, we know for sure over 1,600 years ago, there was a direct account in the Nag Hammadi, which was found. And I think it was the Apocryphon of Philip, the Apocryphon of James, where there's a direct description of the encounter between the guy James and who was being taught by his master what to do when you're confronted with the Archons, and they look like the Greys. I'm sorry, they look just like them. 1,600 years ago, they were described back then. And so what Jacques Vallée is talking about is this, you know, we've been programmed to kind of see that and project it because we have this genius ability to dream and project our reality in front of us. And this would apply also, of course, to this archontic interaction. Now, whether all interactions are archons and humans, I'll leave that up in the air. I don't know, you know, but I'm looking at this particular example. It seems like a certain significant amount of them are, particularly with respect to reptilians and the Greys, because both of those types were described by the Gnostics they go back 6,000 years, but let's just say, you know, the earliest record is 1,600 years ago. We know that they already described the reptilians and the Greys back then. So, but they described them as a mimetic species, meaning going back to the idea that they weren't the intended. We are the intended. We're actually the intended, and the planet is the destination, our habitat, and where we can expand and explore this genius that we have. And yet there's this mimetic species that can only copy. And so what are they doing? Well, they're copying our genius. They're copying our ideas, right? And, you know, one of the things that just struck me kind of bizarre again the other day is I was thinking back on how we produced our film, The Extraterrestrial Species Almanac. You know, we interviewed a lot of people And that they're in the film and they talk about their interaction with the extraterrestrials, sometimes personal interaction in some cases, right?
Yes.
And one of the questions that I had for one of the persons, I'm not going to mention who she is, but they were saying it's genetic. Their whole family, you know, was a whole, they've all been abducted, right? And they've all been given these assignments and, you know, whatever on the earth. And they've been implanted with certain technology so that they can track them, right? We all heard about those. We've all heard about these implants, right? That are, you know, described. And I think it was John Mack, the doctor, that would take them out and they would do the, you know, they'd have them on the laboratory table and they'd say, oh, this is giving off a signal, blah, 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 right? Well, you know what struck me? It was funny, Craig.
What's that?
Well, I mean, what did we learn in 2020 and 2021? Well, we learned for the first time from a few brave scientists who took the vaccines and put them under dark field microscopes and observed their behavior over time, is that these nanotechnologies actually form into sensors and they can send and receive information. And they can take on, they can basically, like a Trojan horse, they can invade your cell and they can take over those cells. They can kill off the natural cell, grab a certain amount of the coating and create a new artificial cell. So that within those bodies of people who have that Betelgeuse in them, they're now inhabited by both natural cells and artificial cells. And these artificial cells fit correctly and totally into the patent diagrams of the Internet of Bodies, which is talking about how the technologies under our skin, and this is no great, this isn't hocus pocus anymore. This is all just, this has been documented, okay? This is science, right? So they now have in our day, right, the 21st century, we humans have already developed technology to be able to track and trace and read and record and even influence the minds of human beings who have the Betelgeuse in substantial amounts in their bodies, right? Following?
I am.
Well, think about the people who were abducted in the 1960s and 70s. They were abducted, what we are told, they are abducted by who? By an extraterrestrial species. And the automatic assumption is these extraterrestrials are advanced, right? They're highly advanced, way more advanced than humans, right? Because why? They've got some kind of transportation mechanism, which, you know, nobody can understand, or it's faster than light, or, you know, they come from someplace across the galaxy or wherever they come from, right? And what do they do to their subjects that they abduct on the planet to keep tabs on them? Mm. Well, they insert a little tracker in them, don't they?
Yeah, a little implant. Well, yeah.
So are you going to tell me, and this is one of the questions I had, so you think it's funny that we dumb human beings that are just their little cattle experiments have developed nanotechnology for the last 20, 30 years already, which can, you know, on a nanoscale, track and trace and build and create computers and microprocessors and routers and all the things that are in their little patent diagrams, and yet some superior race of aliens from some other place in the galaxy, you know, Andromeda or wherever they come from, right, had to come here and that, you know, some huge chunk of, like, you know, like something the size of like this, you know, stuck in the human, right? Like, oh yeah, we gotta trace them, right? Because otherwise we're gonna lose them, right? It doesn't add up, Craig. It does add up, and I'm gonna be done with my little rant.
Oh, keep going.
It does add up if you realize that what Jacques Vallée and what Lash is talking about with the Gnostics revealed in those documents is that they're not an advanced species. They're actually the Archons, and the Archons are only going to be as good technologically as whatever we've given them to work with. So what did we have back in the 50s and 60s for trackers? We had these dumb tracker things that was sticking the cattle, right? So we could follow them around the field, right? And know where the cattle's migrated to, right? Up in the mountains in Colorado. So they wouldn't go lost, right? Well, why didn't the advanced species already have the nanotechnology in the 60s? Guess what? That's where the light bulb went on with me, because they weren't an advanced species. They were just pilfering and stealing our software, our technology, and using it for their own benefit. and conjunction and together with the powers that be, which are these governments in collaboration with secret societies and the deep state. So that's where I'll stop for now.
No, I think that's perfect. And so we have people who are implanted with pretty much Apple AirTags by an advanced society, advanced race, whatever you want to call it. But what you're saying sounds perfect, because then we realize that the Archons, we see it from the perspective of the Greys or reptilians. They're really a parallel existence that is a low tech replication of our technology.
They take our technology and they know the only way, and if they can get us to fall in love with IT, mm-hmm. information technology, then they can use information technology to keep us, which is their mission. Remember, their idea is to keep us away from realizing who we are and what we are. They want nothing more than to destroy us, the experiment of Sophia and the planet altogether, if they could, right? So the way they do that is through belief system ideologies and through using our own technology against us. So we developed artificial intelligence. We developed nanoscale technologies and sensors, and we're the ones that are putting it into the field out there. And the Archons are simply saying, okay, great. They've given us something even better to work with. Let's just get them totally hypnotized by this technology and get them completely addicted to it so that we'll take over completely. So we don't, because remember, the Archons can't live in our beautiful biosphere. We were designed to live here. We live in this beautiful paradise of a planet. Let's not forget it, as much as we hate the hell that it's turned into. All of us are not, none of us are immune to the frustration and the observation. In fact, the more conscious you get, the more evil you see out in the world, the more depressing you're prone to be, right? You're prone to depression because you're sensitive to the transgression against the creation, because all of us know that we're this creation and we're connected to the mother, right? And we're the divine beings that are supposed to be here. We're it, right? This is material is everything, as they say, and the Gnosticism, as much as spiritualists are going to say, what? It's not material. It's the etheric and blah, 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 the fifth dimension. No, it's material where the action happens. That's where everyone wants to be. Because, you know, here we can pick up the pencil and I can throw it at you at the screen, or I can write with it and write a great book with it and pass that book forward 100 years and give them a time machine into the mind of me in our times right now. That's something that only we can do. And that's something that makes this material realm divine. Okay. As much as we have paranormal faculties and all these other abilities, the real fun and the real action happens here on the material level. So, but the Archons, they can't be in this material level. So they try to get us into, you know, our minds, into the virtual world, into the simulation, right? The simulation. In fact, the Archons had a word for it. The Gnostics had a word for it. They called it hell. Hell, actually, they had a word for simulation 2,000 years ago. Can you believe that, right? They had a word for a simulation 2,000 years ago. Those club toting leather, you know, skirt idiots running around back then actually knew about simulation. Can you imagine that, right? This is how far we've been led astray from reality, my brother.
We have been. And there's such a mental aspect of it too, is because when you look at AI, it really is handing over, because I see the dark kind of magnetism that it is out there that people fall into mentally, where like when you look at the AI, it will lure you into, of course, letting it think for you. But the thing is, it's like, I think of Doge, for instance, right now, and a lot of people are lured into Doge. They go, yes, 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 yes. It's efficient. It's efficient. It doesn't need people. It's an AI, and it's finding human. Of course, a lot of it is deliberate corruption and such, but it's finding these, lack of absolute perfect productivity and such. It's finding waste, you know, and it's driven by this department. It's driven by, you know, Elon, which always really kind of freaked me out when one of the first things he talked about was, we have to, you know, fire up the H-1B visas, because we have a problem here in the West, is that our productivity is not comparable to countries that have slave labor. this won't work. So you get this like, and people start to, they fall for this dark AI theory of, you know, only the AI can do it perfectly. We're very, very slow. We're very, very hopeless. Only the AI can save us. And so whatever Doge does, whoever it's laying off, you know, and it's definitely a propaganda machine as well, but you have to like trust the AI. So like when all of your friends in like the forestry department, you know, which is drastically understaffed, if it wasn't for volunteers, it couldn't even, you know, keep track of how many bats we have in the forest, you know, basically when they get laid off, you have to just trust that it's for the greater good, you know? And so, and there's so many examples I could give, like for money laundering. You know, there's a tremendous, every transaction you make is, I know for a fact, is analyzed in so many different ways. And people don't quite realize, you click your card, I'm going to buy that, boom, it sets off an incredible series of scans of who you are, what you're doing, you know, where was this money, where did it go? And so your every transaction is AI'd as F, you know. And then when they say, you know, you're a bad person and they come and black bag you and stick you in the pokey, you have to just trust it was for the greater good. So in a way, the Archons, they love to lure us into that AI virtual fake reality where, which is logic based. You've got this kind of strange autistic dude, Elon, who's very logic based, obviously, right. You know, and probably fairly autistic. I don't know how it's an act. I don't know what he's doing, who he is really, but he's like the perfect AI human, you know, and it is
stutter and everything, right? It works beautifully, right?
It's like a church, and I'm watching people who, anyway, I'm just, we've come into a place beyond politics where all, you know, untruths are now hidden between two truths, and even that is engineered. So anyway, I think there's just the dark magicians of the AI, the Archons. They really know how to pull people in. And I see it as this like dark seduction. And then when you start thinking about the injected, you know, nano reality, which can mm-hmm. create cells, which can create its own version of cells, which can be a transceiver, which can then control people. Now, wasn't it weird how it was kind of a religion going and getting it? And it still is. Give me the AI so I can be controlled. In a way, it takes away your responsibility as a human. You know, I'll just say no to that and I'll let it all be done for me. And there is a larger part of the population than I really care to admit that is really all for that, because then you no longer have to, life's just shitty, but you exist until eventually you die.
Yeah, and that is the question. What do people imagine they're going to be doing?
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny because it's funny how a guy like Elon will make a comparison to countries where people are, where they're slaves, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, what they don't tell you about is that, you know, you're a slave, man. We're all slaves here. What is this? Do you think this is a glorious existence that you have to get up every day and hustle your ass off so mm-hmm. that you can raise just enough money so that you can just, you know, make your rent? And it's like, you know, the Groundhog Day every day over. You think that's the existence of a divine, intelligent God? No, man, we're slaves now. They've just fooled us into believing that we have freedom, but we don't have freedom. And it's become very, very evident just from the people who actually spoke up during the entire Beetlejuice chapter, which certainly isn't probably, and I hope, you know, well, it's probably not over, but I wouldn't want to project the next one. Let's just say, maybe there will be another one, or, you know, people say there might be, there will, or it's around the corner, whatever. But regardless, we had that chapter and we can learn from history. It's a teachable moment, but it taught us that we really are slaves, because those people who spoke up, they were canceled or arrested. And you know, those people who we respect in society as the doctors and the higher educated, they followed along the cult. And we're going rah, 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 right? Follow the chant of the cult. And they were getting everyone into chanting, you know, the same, you know, dogmatic injection, you know, protocol. And they did it and it worked, you know. And so the idea of the slave thing is distorted to begin with. That's the first thing I would say. The other thing I would say is that people that that think that, there's no way we're never going to go for a digital currency and we're not going to do that. No way. We're not going to do that. Right. We're smarter than that. Well, they don't work that way. They don't work. They've learned their lesson by direct confrontation. They don't get what they want. They would rather have us fight each other. That's great. Yes. They love watching those spectacles like Black Lives Matter against whatever, throw a George Floyd in the mix and, stir it up a little and watch the action. You know, hey, guys, come on. Yeah. There's the next one coming, right? And they're watching, all laughing their asses off. They love doing that. But one thing they don't want is they don't want any real knowledge passed, any real confrontation happening between them and us. But so they work inconspicuously. So if they can teach us to love what they want to put into our society, then that's how it works brilliantly. And they have none other than Elon Musk as the best candidate they could have wished for. And that's why I don't think anything's an accident. In fact, there's some video, obscure video of him back in 2000, I think, where he, with PayPal or something, he made his big first paycheck and he ordered some Lamborghini or whatever was it, something like that. And they delivered the car and they had him on this obscure commercial, right? Just really weird. You never heard of this guy, Elon Musk, before. And all of a sudden he's getting this car delivered. You should check it out. It's up there on the web. Corbett Report, I think, had a good report. Corbett Report did a great report on Elon Musk, right? So you can find it there. But, so it's no coincidence, right? But if they can get a guy like that, who's the cool guy that has the cool factor, his wife or one of his wives, I guess now, is a rock singer, and they've got weird names and it's perfect. It's like we're writing a script here. We got to write it well. We've got some of the best damn script writers in history. Okay. And Hollywood, is the testing ground for some of the best scripts that they've put onto society. Right. So now the script is, we can't put him into a full-on battle against us. No way. We don't want that. There's way too many of them and far too few of us. But if we can get them, enchanted and addicted to X, for example, X using X and X and it's a censor-free platform. Everyone can go on X now. We'll get Alex Jones and Joe Rogan to push it because they're the most popular alternative media people out there. And soon millions and eventually billions and eventually most of the planet will migrate to using X because it's the logical direction, because it's censor-free. And guess what? They've got a team of application developers that their CEO, who incidentally, used to work at used to be part of the World Economic Forum, but let's not go into that detail right now. But she's now the CEO of X, and she's now put a call out to application developers to create the Everything app.
And guess what?
Everyone will jump to it, and they'll be using, because they're already on X, right? So it's it's a no-brainer, right? If you can download the X app now, and I think obviously there is, and you can, guess what? You can surf the web. You can go to Facebook or whatever else you do. Hopefully you're mostly on X, but hey, we'll give you freedom of choice. You can go to, all Instagrams and everything. But, better yet is you can do your banking, and you can, guess what? You can trade and get some of that cool new crypto stuff called Doge. Because you didn't know anything about crypto because we're all idiots. What is crypto? How does that work, right? To trade my dollars? No. Hey, you can just get X app and what? Guess what? It'll hook up to your bank account and you can tell your bank account you want to buy some of those new cool Doge dollars, right? The crypto. And so, hey, you'll do it, of course, because you're an idiot. You don't know anything about, where it's going to lead. It just looks great, though, because it's a censor-free platform. Everyone loves the founder. He's going to be going to Mars. I mean, it doesn't get cooler. The script is down, man. They've got this one down. And now, everyone's migrated to X, and they're all using the app. And guess what? Trump, his buddy, his best buddy now, who he hangs out with all the time at Mar-a-Lago, he said, no, you got to cancel CBDCs. They're evil. We don't want CBDCs. That's centralized digital banking currency. That means that the bank has control of everyone's currency. Mm-hmm. Well, now that everyone's on X and everyone's using for free and with freedom of choice, we all have free will, right? We're all using our own new crypto digital currency. And guess what? It's cool because, because Elon is such a cool guy that randomly out of the blue, anyone who might be an ex-app owner who has this new Doge currency might get a ding ding $1 million deposit out of nowhere just because the fairy tooth mother just appeared and gave them $1 million. And guess what? That's because Elon believes in spontaneous acts of generosity.
Yeah,
that's such a cool new age idea, right? And wow, he's such a hero. And guess what? Pretty soon, everyone that's resisted is going to be flocking to it. And they're all going to be using the digital Doge currency. And guess what? No one's going to be using cash anymore. Because you know what? It's going to dry up like a dead plant in the corner of your room that didn't get water. No, and so that's how they do it, Craig. Yeah.
And Elon, I can identify with him because since we're all, you know, slightly autistic now, he speaks like an autistic person.
I can't even speak a sentence just like me, man. Look at him.
Yeah, so I can identify with him. He speaks my language. And now, like, our social credit score, we get bonuses and Doge when we're good. You know, it's kind of like in video games, like achievement badges and stuff like that. You know, you get like your, you get Doge when you're good. You get a good
right. So now you're in on the, and it's now they, you know, it's gotten so popular that they decided to change the name of the X app to X.gov because
really?
The government's already like incorporated. They're already, you can file your income tax returns and eventually they'll simplify them because we're going to be too dumb to file them anyway. So they'll make just, you fill out a couple of things and then you just do your tax things there on X and it's easy. Right. So what happens is that the people, you know, this is going back to the question is, what are all those people going to do now, you know, with all this stuff, this free time now that AI is doing everything, right? Well, what they're going to try to do is just, they're going to try to move us into kind of a post-human future. Because if you volunteer to give up the old system and you find that, hey, you know, you can, I don't have time to write this book right now or this article right now. I'll just get ChatGPT. I'll just give them a couple I'll just give them a couple of ideas and bingo, it'll write a whole book for me. It's like awesome, right? So boom. And you know what? I need some graphics on the book and I got to have a few pictures in the book. So otherwise it'll be boring. So boom, it'll create the graphics for you in the book. It'll even format the book for you. And then in whatever style or cool format you want, you know, maybe it'll be a trend to have books that look like they're from the 50s again. And then there'll be ones like, just like vinyl is a trend again, right? They'll use these ideas to get us to stop creating ourselves. We will no longer be making art. It's already happening. We'll no longer create music any longer because we already have apps that create music, artificial intel. I did a show with John Nolan on that. You know, we showed the level of where it was at. This is months ago. It's already way beyond it. They're already making films using AI. They're making music, they're writing books, art, everything. Pretty soon will all become a pastime of the humans. And so what are we doing? Well, we're getting more and more immersed in just being, you know, using whatever AI is created for us and reacting to it. So we're sitting with our goggles, or pretty soon we won't even need the goggles anymore, or just have some glasses. We can, in fact, that's what Google Glass and Apple Vision's all about. They have, you know, both worlds superimposed right on top of each other. So you can still see the real world, right? But hey, the simulated world on top is so much cooler. And they start putting all those things in, right? And that's where it will go, to the point where eventually AI will start creating our reality for us because we're no longer creating it. We're not doing the music, the writing, the artwork, and any of that stuff. We, you know, through the lack of using those things, you know, there's that famous saying, right? If you don't use it, you lose it.
Yeah.
And so we've gotten now cognitively diminished. We don't know how to create anymore. And we don't even know, you know, what we want to do anymore. So what happens is that AI begins to create reality for us. And in fact, you know, there's a book out there called written by, you know, Kissinger and Eric Schmidt, right? And it's about the AI futures, right? The future of AI. Okay. And what's it called again? I wrote it down somewhere. The Age of AI. Yeah. And you should read that book. I mean, they pretty much lay it out for you right there, right? So they want us to go into the direction of this cognitive, and they're already talking about how AI is kind of funky and hallucinates. It's like AI hallucinates weird shit. It's like totally hallucinates stuff. Sorry for my French there, but
it's perfect.
It hallucinates weird stuff. And the hallucination, they actually had the audacity, Kissinger and Schmidt, in that book to say, you know, AI is so much smarter than human beings that maybe it's not a hallucination. Maybe that's a parallel universe. Maybe that's another timeline, right? So because we're too stupid to know anyway. And so what happens is that this hallucinate, you're going to start to see hallucinated reality in terms of timelines. We're talking about two timelines now. I think that once we skip, if that timeline prevails, Craig, the transhumanist timeline, and we get into it, there's going to be a splinter into gazillion timelines at that point. You won't know where the hell you are anymore. Am I on Earth? Am I on Venus? Well, actually, you know what? I can enter this program and I can go live on, Andromeda. I can go hang out with the Arcturians, We already know what they look like, right? So they're going to create Arcturians for you, and you'll be hanging out with Arcturians pretty soon. You won't even come back to Earth because it's damn boring anyway. You don't have you don't have anywhere to go because your job's gone. You're living on universal basic income. You don't have a car anymore because they've banned carbon combustion engines, and you can't afford an electric car. So, and you don't have enough credits to get one to take you wherever you want to go. So you sit at home with your Apple Vision and you go to Arcturus, and you hang out with the Arcturians. I mean, it's logic, no go. It's a logo thing, right? Isn't it?
When you think about the movie Idiocracy, that really was what the people did. They would sit there and they would, put their IV in, and they'd have their little sucky tube for whatever they're drinking, and they would just watch. But
Hollywood writes the scripts for what they want in reality.
And that's what they want. They want an Idiocracy. And then you do look at, breaking free from that matrix. That matrix was the Matrix, an amazing, movie. And so now that'll become the day where, when Morpheus, Neo asked Morpheus, why do my eyes hurt? And Morpheus said, because you've never used them. And I think for the people who are awakening, who already are awake and are awakening further, we're always awakening. I don't have it down yet. I'm awakening,
And it should always be that way. In fact, it should never stop.
Yeah, exactly. And it does teach us, humility, because we realize, man, I have believed some bullcrap, but I don't learning. Now. Yeah. Yeah. We're always shedding. We're always becoming more light. So we're always doing it. And it does make your eyes hurt. It's weird, but that line from the Matrix, it's true. I mean, the more you awaken, the more, it's not depressing, but there is this aspect of pain, like your eyes hurt because you go, oh my gosh, I'm seeing this and others don't. And it's heartening. You wish the best for people, but there are two trains and they're heading in different directions from the train station. They're two different timelines. And, what do you do? I guess you do this to help everybody. You do one's best. Well, the Archons, the Harry Potter books were interesting. I saw a little bit of wisdom here and there in the Harry Potter books. And one of the things, and it was in the movie, it was very, very good. Voldemort, the ultimate evil, they make it very, very easy. It's like Star Wars. The Emperor is the bad guy. Darth Vader is the bad guy. Nothing to do with you. It's out there, Well, still same thing in the Harry Potter books. There was Voldemort, and you see him in this like reality between realities, like where you are, your true essence. And he was basically this big bloody fetus on the floor, and that's what not Gandalf, Dumbledore says to Harry. He explains, he goes, that's Voldemort's soul. That's who he really is. In our world, he's very powerful, but this is his true essence. And that's why you should have empathy for him. Wow. So, they do write the script. I mean, a little J.R. Rowling, she kind of filled us in on something there.
Yeah. And that's not the only place. I mean, the Matrix films, of course, they're a very blatant example of it.
Blatant.
and literally, the thing is, one of the things they talk about in apparently in the age of AI, and I've only read small excerpts from it here and there, so I haven't read the whole thing, but I've read enough to know also know who wrote it. An idea of where they're going, but they look at two directions that this is going to go into. Either people are going to rise up against AI and the machine, and there's going to be some kind of a revolution. Or they're there's going to be a new religion born, and the religion of AI, essentially, right? And so for me, when I read that and when I saw that and recently was reminded of it again, it brought back up that whole thing about something that was developed by this Jesuit priest called, by the name of Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, and it was called Noosphere. Have you heard of that?
No, I've not.
You look at it. It's actually, this is predates us by 100 years, Craig. Okay.
No,
they were already, right? There was a bio geochemist, I think. His name was Vladimir Vernadsky. And him, and he was a philosopher, and the Jesuit priest, you know, Deschardin, the two of them concocted this idea that the human family was going to develop into a mind sphere that would basically, you know, physically actually appear over the earth, like, you know, that collectively our minds would reach a network connectivity that would be something like the internet is now, you know, except on a mental level, like an earth's mental sheath or something. And this is what they envisioned happening. And then, of course, later on, people like Barbara Marx Hubbard grabbed and gravitated toward that idea and began, when the internet began to become more and more powerful, they began to promote these ideas of the noosphere and the United Nations as well, you know, and that the, and so now you have to ask yourself, is the noosphere, you know, has an ideal as well. Okay. The ideal of the noosphere is something which isn't too strange from the Gnostic idea of Sophia as a earth conscious body, an aeon who's dreaming us anthropos, her children onto the planet. And so in a way, when we raise our consciousness and our awareness and our connection to Sophia, we actually connect with her in a form, forming a kind of a network, a grid. So we're actually, there is kind of an organic form of what Deschardin was describing as far as the noosphere goes. However, as we always know, and in the case of Barbara Marx Hubbard, who's kind of like the godmother of transhumanism, she was essentially sponsored by none other than Rockefellers and some of these other think tanks, right? Because why? Because the elite always have a handle on all of these concepts before the normal people, die Normalsterblichen, as they call them in German, you know, get their hands on it. So first they kind of take these ideas and they kind of dumb them down a little bit. So the noosphere, I think, is kind of developed into the idea of the transhumanist migration of biological human beings from biological natural bodies into a, at first transitional biomechanical interface, which Neuralink, for example, is a perfect transitional tool. And the Betelgeuse and the nanotech I was describing earlier is another iteration of. So you have this growing digital mechanized, you know, non-living inorganic penetration into the biological world, which is exactly what the Archons are trying to do, because the Archons are non-organic. They're an abiological unit. They're not biological. They're not one of the ways that Lash describes them is they're not wet.
Yes.
Anything that's alive, remember that, is wet.
Yes, it is.
Beautiful. An easy way to describe the damn thing in one word. Wet, dry, right? And try pouring a cup of coffee on your computer and see what happens, right? You can try wine. Water works too. but I'm saying, you know, that's where what's happening is that the dry is penetrating into the wet and is essentially getting us into, and it looks just, I guess you could almost visualize it the way they did in the Matrix, where they're all kind of in these incubator chambers lying there in a hypnagogic state of just breathing, and, you know, they're being fed, you know, amniotic fluid so that their bodies keep functioning and that their brain waves keep going, but they're actually just supplying the AI with, you know, a power source in that case. But in our case, like, if we're moving into that reality, that's kind of what the noosphere is, the way the elitists, I think, would describe it now. I don't believe it's the altruistic ideological concept I originally talked about, where the connection with Sophia, and that's the real noosphere. That's where we really do connect, but it's not a nobody sphere. It's actually, it's the realization of where Earth becomes this full being and in harmony with humanity. And then we make an evolutionary leap into another level of consciousness altogether. And not even the divine aeons living at the Pleroma in the center of the galaxy have any idea what that looks like, which is what I think is so genius about what the Gnostics' version of creation is in comparison to the Yaldabaoth biblical, you know, Judaic Talmudic way of describing it. Like, it's just so open-ended in the Gnostic way. And it's no surprise that the Gnostics were hounded and eradicated from the surface of the planet, because the ideal that they were telling humans about, which was this ultimate connection of them with Mother Earth, far surpasses anything AI or any AI kind of existence on Earth will ever get to.
Yeah. And it makes sense to, like, I tend to meditate on the reality that Sophia dreams you are awake, you know?
Yeah.
And so really you can just, and ultimately, you know, that is our essential essence, of course, is that consciousness.
Well, why do we dream, right? Why do we dream? Yeah. We dream, right? That's that, not everything dreams.
No.
You know,
dry things don't dream.
Only living creatures dream. And then we have the other thing, the other extreme is what I just described, the hallucinated reality of the AI, which is faulty and weird and wonky because, you know, errors in the programming and the algorithm's gone nuts, and the creativity algorithm was programmed by some weirdo or whatever. You know, I mean, this is the other option. This is the simulated version of reality. Which isn't, you know, which doesn't exist, but because we believe it and because we're getting sucked into it, that's the only way it could ever live. And so, you know, this is these two things that were described in the age of AI, you know, these two directions. And of course, they do not want the version where the people rise up against the AI. Of course, that's the problem for them, right? They want to keep us dormant. And, John Peterson, when I was there in Arlington at the Institute last November, was talking about Armstrong, this guy Armstrong, who has these predictive algorithms and stuff. And he predicted that there's going to be a global revolution rising up sometime this year or next year. So the question is, what is that revolution? Is that the revolution that the elitists are afraid of? Is that evolution driven by a thorough understanding of the revolutionaries, what their revolution is going up against? Because if it's just another George Floyd scenario, then we're just going to destroy ourselves. But if it is truly a crux moment in the evolution of the human, the anthropos, you know, the human animals take another level of, like, you know, to reach another divine level of existence, is it going to be that? And it's both of those are potential energy that wants to manifest, that wants to happen. When people ask me, what do you think about, you know, what this awakening movement in the world, what's that all about? I would say the closest thing I would describe it at would be that kind of a revolutionary move where people would literally rise up, but they would have to do it conscious of the awareness of what it means. What are they fighting for? Or are they just fighting for, you know, better tasting insect burgers and a faster iPhone? You know, I mean, literally, these are the things that we have to be considering. And in the debate about AI and the penetration into society and government functions, we should be talking about all of these issues. And we don't see that. That's why, going all the way back to what we started with today, the election day in Germany, I assure you, none of the people at the AFD and their meetings are talking about this stuff. In fact, I've had AFD members come to my talks and say, you need to come and talk at the, you know, such and such meeting. Of course, I never end up getting down to the invitation. For some reason, it sort of fizzles out.
Yeah.
Why? Because maybe someone sitting at the helm there is going, no, we don't want that Frank guy here, man. He's going to wake the rest of them up. Right. So is the AFD awake? I highly doubt it. But if they were, they'd be talking about this kind of stuff. And they would be hinting at it they may not have to put it full on in their marketing campaign, but they could be hinting at it and giving the people who are sleepers on the cusp of awakening a little bit of a prick that, well, it's time. We need to wake up now, right? Now is the time to get active, because listen, if we don't do it now, it's really, it probably will go back into another age-long cycle of, you know, the world will continue until the AI destroys itself.
Yeah. And I find that one of the things that a society needs to exist is really hope. And I look at the current like American situation with Doge, and people are putting their hope into that. And yeah. They're also putting a desire for vengeance, which is not really healthy. They're, you know, a lot of people, you know, and bless you, I know you're listening, and I know people will mention this to me later, but like, who really believe that we're going back to a constitutional republic, and you know, we're going to audit the Fed, all this stuff, right? It's where people are being told everything they want to hear,
yeah,
and they put hope into it, and their hope ultimately, like the very point of that knife. Or that chainsaw, like Elon Musk with his chainsaw. Oh, I'm, you know, the chainsaw democracy, whatever, you know, is AI, because that's what Doge is, you know. And that's the thing is they know they are constant. They cannot take you on full on. Like they can't say this is our plan. And
you have to volunteer into it.
It needs your hope. I think it's one of the most powerful things in humanity is hope. So now there is hope. Doge, the AI, will fix all of our problems and get us back to, like, I don't know, when, you know, George Washington was walking around with John Adams talking about, you know, a vision of the Constitution. It's like, and it's almost, it's disturbing to me, because there are many who absolutely have that belief. The guy who, I forget. There's a lot of people that they're pulling in that sound great. Oh, I forget his name now. I won't hold us up. But he's, I think, going to be the one who audits the Fed. I don't know if that really happens. There's so much going on. And it sounds really great from a distance. But yeah, they've harnessed humanity's hope, this incredibly powerful thing that we need to exist. And the tip of that sword, that chainsaw, is Doge. And, you know, I don't know. I'm seeing people in the Forestry Service laid off, but I mean, and I'd never even really heard of, USAID before, but I can tell from just a distance, it was, of course, it's a, you know, CIA slush fund, you could say, to do regime change and all kinds of horrible stuff. It's beyond party, but all of a sudden, that was what the Democrats used to do all of this stuff. And so I see this fervor, and I just start thinking, are we going to have, like, you know, like the crystal knock again? You know what I mean? Are we going to, it's like, it's getting a little, you know, maybe the crystal knight wasn't all bad, but I'm just saying, it's like,
well, I mean, whatever it was, we didn't never got the truth about it, what it really was anyway.
Yeah,
so
yeah, we never got the truth. Yeah. And
whenever,
so
something, you know, there's that saying also, whenever something is too good to, sounds like it's too good to be true.
Exactly.
Right. So this is one of those classic moments. It's too good to be true, right? I think maybe the guy you're talking about, was it John Titus?
Not John Titus. Oh, he's an old school American politician. He's out of the, I think Elon Musk pulled him in, or Trump pulled him in to do some of the Doge stuff, I think. You know, he's the guy who always wanted to get rid of the Fed. I forget. He ran for president a time or two. And,
Ron Paul, or
Rand Paul's son.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is Ron Paul. So they pulled him in, and people are like, oh yeah, see, you know, it's the truth now, because, and it's, I'm like,
just look back on Rand Paul's political decisions and you'll realize, you know, whose side he is really on. Right. Exactly. It's just like people who think that RFK Jr. is now going to be the savior to the vaccination pharmacological penetration of usurpation of the American system. Only have to look back to his days where he was sponsoring Hillary Clinton when one of his nephews was the biggest pharmaceutical sponsor candidate in the state of New York, right? He was fully behind the pharmas then, right? It's like, you know, and he's like, now he's almost like, he's turned the other way. He's like, he's almost insisting, I am not anti-vax, right, in his weird voice. You know, pardon me, but
it's true.
You know, Titus is like, what John Titus has released this documentary series where he basically breaks down that. And I think the key takeaway from that documentary, as far as I know, is that the Fed isn't all powerful. And I think a lot of people mistake the power of the Fed in America. And I think what the distinction he makes is between central international banks and the Federal Reserve, because the Federal Reserve is not a central bank connected. It is doing business internationally, but they're still in the constitutional, in the constitution and in the actual contract of what the Fed is and who controls it, without unequivocal doubt, the Congress has absolute power to, from today to tomorrow, fire them all, lock the doors, and take it over. They could. Americans could do that. And Americans don't even realize this. And what I love about Titus's films is he's telling people, wait a minute, guys, who told you the Fed is all powerful? Just because Ben Bernanke and Alan Greenspan, you know, in those famous minutes where they're asking him, well, who does the Fed answer to? And they're like, nobody. You know, we don't have to answer to the president. Well, they're telling the truth, but they don't tell you that they don't have to answer to Congress, because everyone thinks the president is the most powerful man. Right. So That's why it's the president going into the Fort Knox. I'm going to check out, see if the gold's here, dudes. Right. It's not Congress.
It'll be pay-per-view too.
I mean, like literally Congress could shut the Fed down immediately.
Yes.
And ban income tax immediately. Right. So what should Elon be doing? He should actually be doing, if he really cares, infomercials, if you will, where he explains it to the cognitively diminished American population, just how the system works and how you can re-empower yourself and you can work yourself back out of your cognitive diminishment and empower yourself. But he's not. Yes. He's not doing that. Right. So, you know, there's really, I mean, this is kind of the situation that we have going in the world right now. That's why I call it post-truth world, because the truth is out there. But nobody's telling us the truth. They're mixing it all up with a bunch of distortions. There's a lot of conspiracy theories floating around out there. And believe me, I'm guilty of, you know, pushing conspiracy theories for decades. But I'm starting to look at myself, Craig, and go, wait a minute, why did I believe in that conspiracy? And you're realizing that you expected it would have come out in the laundry by now, right? That the conspiracy would have exploded, imploded, or become exposed. Guess what? No, it's still trucking along. Same old conspiracies from 30, 40 years ago, just new kids on the block, you know, buying into the new form of the conspiracy. And it's just the same. And you realize that conspiracy in and of itself, the dark side of it. Okay. I'm not saying that it's not healthy to question, and certainly is, to question, you know, the powers that be and put everything to the test. But when conspiracies become so dogmatic that people just unequivocally accept them, like chemtrails, like, I see him right there. Look at that airplane right there. He's spraying chemtrails. I used to be one of those, but if you know my channel, I did an interview with Jim Lee, and there's probably very few people, he doesn't even call himself an expert, but I would say there's probably very few people that are interested in the chemtrail weather warfare geoengineering subject that are as knowledgeable about it as he is, because he was like us. He wanted to get to the bottom of it. And guess what he found? He found, like everybody else, when you pull the Wizard of Oz curtain, guess what? There is no plan. This is just, it's us. It's like people never stopped to consider when Amazon boomed and took off, you know, and we all wanted our Prime delivery overnight, that all the, you know, all of a sudden, you know, the plane traffic from all these countries, which cheaply manufactured the stuff we wanted as dirt cheap as possible, had to be flown over from China or Taiwan or wherever they flew it, exponentially boomed. And all of a sudden, the number of planes flying in the air went up by 1,000-fold. Mm. Okay. Well, what's going to happen to the skies, right? And then at the same time, rules are passed at NATO where they have to put certain things into the fuel. Yeah, there's your chemtrails. It's everywhere, but they're not. There's no guy sitting there with a switch like, here we go. All right, there was the chemtrails. This is the conspiracy lie. And that's the one most people are still bamboozled with. That's the Wizard of Oz behind the curtain with the little horn, right? And that's all I was saying in that interview with Jim Lee. And that interview is very empowering, because you know what? You realize they don't have full spectrum control. They don't control the weather. They don't. They want to. And they're trying to, and there's lots of patents and stuff where they tried to, but guess what? It doesn't work. You know, it's like, really, I mean, look at Sophia, as a plasma being who became the world, right? How big? Can you even fathom how big that being is? And then here you come as a little human being and you think you're going to change the weather on this little corner of the planet and you're going to have a lasting effect. It's illusion. Mm. And it's this idea of this full spectrum dominance that keeps us paralyzed, that keeps us victims, that keeps us slaves, right? It's, I think Jim Lee has on his website a document called Slave Speak.
Yes.
I encourage everybody to check it out. I mean, you know, it's just, he's another trooper that's going up against all the people who are, and believe me, he gets slammed by people who want to believe the conspiracies and I have proof and I'm a pilot and stuff, right? Well, guess what? A lot of times when you really look at it and you drill down into it, the evidence vaporizes. It's just, there's nothing there. There's not enough there, you know? Yeah. And it's just like with the religious ideologies, there's nothing there. It's an ideology. If the Archons can get us to believe that we've lost the war, that we're getting killed by the, then guess what? If we believe it, we have the power in our amazing manifestation molecules in our brain to actually lay down and die. We can actually believe it. But did we really lose the battle? No, we believe we did. This is why this is the power of belief. I mean, Bruce Lipton wrote a whole book on that, Biology of Belief. It's true, man. It's like we have to learn this. And so the question is, will we learn it? And will that revolution, which Armstrong, which Peterson was telling me about, which is going to happen, be the people that have learned it and are rising and said, that's it, it's over, the gig's up? Because the gig really would be up very, very quickly. The planet would be healed very, very quickly if there was this mass awakening. But it has to be for the right reasons. And that's what I try to work for. And when I go into the negative stuff, not to get obsessed with the negativity give it power. It's about pulling the pants down on the trickery, saying there's a trick. Don't fall for it, people.
Yeah. And when we talk about the negative, I just see it like, if you're not putting your emotional energy into it, you're not manifesting it. And that's one of the things that I think people who are, you know, good at manifesting, they realize is where, you know, I can talk about negative things without manifesting them.
Right.
But you know, it's only what I put my passion, my energy into. It's only what you create with your consciousness. I mean, you know, people who've been doing it for a while, they get what we're saying. You know, yeah, you can, to speak of it is not necessarily to manifest it unless you intend to. And slave speak, since you mentioned that, it reminds me of with AI weakening us and then being willing to hand life's responsibilities to it. I worked with a vocal coach, and one of the things that she was saying is that vocal fry, we hear that, that's big, you know, we hear that. And also you hear with guys, you hear bro culture, you know, like that's, you hear that. And that's kind of like the Elon Musk speak, you know, so you hear these two versions, you know, there's a female version and a male version. And I guess there's a they, them version, whatever. But ultimately, one of the things that she was saying is that as you develop your voice when you were young and throughout your life, you're developing yourself. And she was saying when rather than develop their voice, which is important, they're just taking on vocal fry or bro speak. And actually that stunts their development. One of the things that she was saying is until they get their own voice, till they actually know what it sounds like within them and they hear it and realize that it is powerful. You know, you could say it's the voice of Sophia if you want, you know, when you really are connected to it. That it stunts their growth. So the thing is, it stunts them as people. They just don't develop. And so you see, as we hand over more to AI, of course, I use it, yes, for some things. I've used it, but it's nice to not be too young right now. It's nice to be a little older because everything was analog when we were younger, you know, and to still be attached to that is still to be attached to our real humanity, to our real source, to our consciousness. So I just want to mention that there is the great AI weakening. And there was a movie, Johnny Pneumatic, Keanu Reeves again, you know, and there was this sickness and people were dying. It was like a plague. And what it ultimately was, it was technology. You know, it was this like AI weakness was like destroying the nervous systems of people. And they were like, what is this plague? Why is everybody dying? Ultimately, it was the AI sickness. And so we're seeing, once again, there's Hollywood giving us the script. I think we're seeing AI sickness right now, and that's what makes people very easy to manipulate, especially when they have willfully, when it was their hope that they were given an injection that now creates a, that now they are a transceiver, you know?
Yes.
And so, that's a tough one, because it was almost like a dark sigil, a dark ritual. I will now sanctify the AI in my body.
Right.
Oh, wow. So we're, the other timeline.
It is like a sacrament, isn't it? Really, the whole ritual, right? You know?
Yeah.
It's, it's bizarre. When I was, I remember I was at the time, there was a few times where I was working, cutting some videos, some films for another company in Munich. And I looked out the window outside of my edit suite, and there were all these people lined up outside. I'm like, what's going on over there? And they said, oh yeah, it's Tuesday. The doctors arrived with the Beetlejuice. It's like, and all these people dutifully lined up like the sacrament, like one after another. Right.
I mean,
it's bizarre, but that's the cult, right? That's the cult of this, you know, this hypnotized slave, you know, society, which, you know, I mean, you know, Tanya and I were talking about that too. Like, you know, I always talk about how, you know, after the time capsule and the work, having, you know, gotten closer to John Lash's work and the idea of the simulation being a fraud and that we're not slaves, there is no slave and there is no kingly, you know, race that has control over the rest of people. But, you know, in a certain way, when people act like slaves, they are actually giving credibility to the idea that they're actually creating that slave race meme thing, where there's masters and the people who are above them, they will take on those roles and they'll call themselves the blue bloods and the kings and the and they'll say, okay, well, you want to play the slave thing? Cool. I mean, I'll be the king, you know, you be the slave. Awesome. Let's do it. Right. So, you know, it is out there, and it's like that exists, but in a way it isn't reality. This is such an important point. You know, what is simulation and what is reality? You know, there is a reality. I'm sorry to say it for the people that are invested in the simulation. And these are all the aspects of the reality that we just lost sight of it. You know, we've been desensitized, but it doesn't mean that reality isn't around us. It's just like people that say, I heard an interesting analogy about, you know, that, you know, the law of gravity, you know, and like everyone's like, well, you know, there's books that say you can overcome the law of gravity and you can float, right? And interestingly, in this anecdote, the person says, yeah, okay, well, let's go up on the roof and let's like to see you walk. You think, well, what do you think is going to happen, right? And yeah, of course, you're going to slam down. So if, you know, and look how many people are on the planet, like now 8 billion people, like, go find me. I don't know. Find me one. You know, like there's got to be some camera recording somewhere with all the iPhones we have out there now of somebody who's walked on air, you know, who's defied gravity, right? Right. Well, maybe if there is one, you know, that actually put so much investment into his belief that he didn't get the law of gravity didn't apply to them. Okay, great. So the guy put his whole energy into it. So what? Like, is it useful to the rest of us? No, it's useless. It's useless to think along those lines. Accept it. There is a reality. There is a material world, right? And you know, unless you think you can step out in front of a car and stop it, you know, like, or like a bullet, like Neo, you know, sorry, until we reach that point, it's pointless. The fact is we are in material, and even Sophia fell into material. And if you look at the new emergent plasma science, it's clear that there's dusty plasma and there's dark plasma and there's glowing plasma, right? And there's blazing plasma, right? So these are different states of plasma. So we're in the one that you can actually touch and feel. That's the interesting one. Because, hey, you want to be in the void all the time? I mean, great. The Buddha went to the void, right? And, you know, it's interesting because the Gnostics and the Buddhists crossed over right around that time, about 4,000 years ago, you know, or sorry, 2,500 years ago, they crossed paths. And it's like a cross-pollination took place. And that's when you saw the emergence of the Mahayana Buddhism, which was the Bodhisattva concept. And what is the Bodhisattva concept? Well, the Buddha, who actually was enlightened, he didn't do Bodhisattva, he just became enlightened. But the enlightened Buddha who turns around and comes back to society and shares and stays in the material realm until every single person has reached enlightenment, that was what they got from the Gnostics. The Gnostics got to the void too. But it's not just about being in that blissful state of void. Yes. If you're not into the, you're not sucked into the incarnation thing, the cycle, all that stuff. No, it's actually turning around and realizing that you, you know, that you take on these, you deliberately accept these things that, that are stuck on you, these reflections, right? And these pretenses, you do these, you pretend, you know, you pretend you're a master, you pretend you're a doctor, but they're just pretenses. And if you understand the pretenses that are real versus the pretenses which are useless to you, then, you know, you have a different relationship to the material world, and you forgive everyone for their pretenses. And if we saw through each other's pretenses, we'd be living in a blissful planet right now, because we'd be laughing our asses off, just like the Buddha, except we'd realize that we'd made it to this planet. This is our place. This is our planet. This is our destination, right? So let's, and this is what the divine aeons wanted us to realize. We haven't gotten there yet. So why escape? You know, yeah. It's getting interesting now.
Oh, yeah. And the world, it's great as you connect to, when I think about the two timelines, the timeline that we want to be on, I always look at it, you know, where do you find it? You find it, well, within, I use that term. So you find it in the I am. You know, and in that place, then, oh, sorry about that. What you're speaking of, so the Buddha went, and then as an act of compassion returned, you could say. So in a sense, we're not, it's a little different, I think, in practice, where as you connect to that I am, well, now you have it to the extent that you do. Maybe it's like for me, I would say, like, I feel it like 0.02 of 1%, right? I have this little boom, but I feel it and I own it and it's always there. And so then the work I'm doing is that. So in a sense, we really are all the Buddha that found it and then returned as an act of compassion.
Yeah. But
it's just, so that's the nice thing about like the Tale of Two Timelines, is that to the extent that you're connected to that I am, you're on that timeline. And that's where the magic is. And it is, yes, it is consciousness, but it's also, it's plasma and matter. It's really this place, this planet, our experience really is where it's at. And once we get that little click of I am, that boom, that spark hits, really, I don't want to say you're done, but it's just so good, you know?
Yeah, and it's the point.
Yeah, you know? That's the whole point of it. And well, I've had you for forever, and I don't want to keep you all day or all evening. It's getting to be evening for you guys, or late afternoon. I wanted to ask the order of things to listen to. So Frank Jacob has a tremendous amount of content out there. And of course, frankjacob.com, probably a good place to start. It's all there. But what is the... You got so much. It's happened over a good amount of time, this incredible canon of work. If somebody wanted to check out, you know, consciousness archaeology, and where would they start? Is there kind of an order that you might suggest? Like if somebody is new to Frank Jacob and they want to get into it, maybe where to start? Is there an order you'd recommend?
Well, I mean, someone asked me that the other day. I think... Was it Nolan asked me that? But I think, I mean, it's up to you. It's up to the individual. Yes. Some people like to know what I'm up to right now. What is my newest realization? And if you wanted to do that, you'd go to cyberhive.tv and you would check out the Time Capsule for the Future Past webinar, because that brings in the Gnostic information. And it also brings in something like a pet subject of mine, revisionist history, for those who are
Don't
believe the narrative of the Second World War and its origins, and wanted to get to the bottom of, you know, what is really behind all that. That's how the Gnostic thing ends up in the middle of all that, believe it or not, going all the way back to when the Archons first penetrated into our current iteration of humanity's existence, you know, the Abrahamic religions, right? And you find out, you know, where that penetration happened, how that penetration happened, and what ensued afterward, and what ultimately led to this showdown in the 20th century, starting in 1939, right? And which is now playing its way out into the final stages. But that was kind of like the last battleground of, you know, there's this, where these two factions went up against each other. And so that's one place to start. But, you know, I mean, obviously I didn't get there like right away. In fact, the timelines thing was sort of my pet subject for a long time. And when the timeline subject exploded to an interesting into an interesting area, which was with regard to these strange videos which appeared by a group calling themselves Guardians of the Looking Glass. I picked up that thread and I tied it into the real. I tried to build the entire story of the Looking Glass technology, timelines, and what these messages are all about, and put it into a very up-to-date context. Yes. And that is a very, very potent webinar. All of them are like usually about three parts. And, you know, so there's a heck of a lot of information in every single. They're all more like masterclasses in a way.
Yeah.
And after that, of course, after that webinar, I got into the connection between us and, you know, and non-space time, which centers around particular organs in the middle of our brain, the hippocampus, the thalamus, the pineal gland. So I did one called the inner looking glass, mm-hmm. Which ties us into, you know, because a looking glass doesn't have to necessarily be an external device. It can actually be, turns out we all have our own inner looking glass. So that would, yes. That one is interesting too. And you know, all of them bring in some overlap and all of them kind of build on each other. And in some ways you could go back and you could look at the information and one of them and say, well, what he's saying here would actually maybe contradict that. And that in itself might be an interesting discussion point. And that's why I have discussion tabs in the actual webinar.
Yes.
Location. So if you have that kind of a question, you want to kind of poke me with some, you know, something like that, I'm more than happy to start that discussion because I'm growing and evolving as well. And I think it's important for researchers to grasp what they think or congeal and put the dot connecting, you know, into perspective with what they believe to know at a certain point in time. And if they find something later which supersedes that, or let's just say puts that into a different context, it's their obligation to go there and not to just continue, well, I said this, I got to keep that one going. You know, I'm invested in it. So many authors, unfortunately, especially in ufology, they maintain this dead end road, even though it's long since been debunked, but they're so invested in it. And there's so many people that believe it that they just keep going and going and going. So my stuff, I kind of make that secret pact with my people who follow my work is that I'm not going to be one of those. I'm going to be honest with you about what I'm finding. Yes. And I'm going to share it with you clearly. And as much detail as possible. And I'm totally open to dialogue. So there's three webinars that are particular ones you're talking about on cyberhive.tv. But, you know, Tanya Maidenford and I also produce some films. If you like watching, you just want to dive into a feature like documentary. We are well known for one of them that actually made waves around the world. And it's still very current. It's called Solar Revolution. Hmm. And you can get them on you can go to Screen Addiction. Or you can even frankjacob.com. I mean, there's links to all of these, but you can find links to the streaming of those films there. So we did Solar Revolution. We did another one with a out of place artifacts researcher in Austria called Klaus Donner, called the Klaus Donner Chronicles, which talks about finds in the world that happened that would totally contradict the archaeological realities we're being told in school, which are in fact dumbed down versions of evidence. And then we have, you know, the punk brother to Solar Revolution, which is Packing for Mars, which is taking the scientific, pseudo-philosophical, crazy road down that idea of colonies on Mars and what led to that, based on the famous novel written by the now deceased Leslie Watkins called Alternative 3. So, I mean, those are three, A6, okay. I don't know. That's a good start. You know, just other than that, my YouTube channel or.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the Alternative 3 is great. Of course, I had to go and read that. And that's you know, after you watch, you know, Frank's documentary on that, then reading it is just that much more fun. It really reads with a lot of meaning. And so, yeah, you guys have your election day there now. We'll see how the AFD does, you know, over here, of course. Well, you've been over here just plenty. You used to live in Sedona, which I think is really cool up the street. And it does seem like maybe we've hit in America like colonialism 2.0, kind of like a trust the plan 2.0. It's this weird logic where we changed from nuance and lying, making excuses, gaslighting, to just telling the truth, which is really weird. And sometimes the truth is odd to see where it's not genocide, it's real estate. You know, and they're just going to straight up tell you that, you know, it's going to be the what Rio, the Riviera of the Middle East. You know, it's a mess now. Who'd want to live there? While you sit next to the dude who did it. You know, of course, yeah. we're absolute compliance with that. Who was really in charge? I don't know. Mega, you know? And so it was not that long ago before they kind of made excuses. Oh, we don't have, there was nuance. There was a little bit of obfuscation. Now it's just, yeah, straight up. That's, we're going to buy that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, I think they're kind of, it's the last, you know, bit of waiting for people to get frustrated to see it. Is there anything blood running in the veins, or is there, like, is it over, you know?
Right? Yeah. Has the injection actually hit full singularity? They don't care. Okay. Well, doom. There we go. Mission accomplished, you know? Oh my gosh. Well, anyways, it's a new and weird truth. Well, thank you so much, Frank Jacob, for coming on to Radiant Creators. This has been great. You know, we covered a lot of ground. I just thought you were a great person to talk to because we're seeing an explosion of craziness in the world right now. But we've got to keep in touch with our timeline and where we're going. And I look forward to seeing Germany and the AFD. And I have a feeling that similar craziness is about to ensue there. So I wish you well.
Yeah, I'm going to run out the door and vote after this.
All right. Well, you go.
Thanks for the impetus. You know?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
My pleasure, Craig. Always a pleasure talking to you. And all the best, and look forward to the next time.
All right. Thanks a lot. Take care. And okay, there we go.